Thank you so much for joining us for this live webinar where we're looking at BRICS, we're looking at South Africa's position in BRICS and how we can leverage that position going forward to really spur growth in South Africa and of course across the African continent. It's a critical conversation because South Africa in 2023 takes over the chairship of BRICS. Now joining me to take this discussion further, I have none other than Busi Mabuza, who is chairperson of the South African chapter of the BRICS Business Council, Willem van der Spee, who is Chief Director, Trade, Industry and Competition at the DTIC, Azam Hlanga, who is Chief Economist at Alex Forbes, and we've got Pranjal Sharma, who is a geoeconomic analyst and author. He's joining us all the way from New Delhi, India. Thank you so much for your time. Busi, I want to kick off from your side in terms of getting an understanding of what the chairship of BRICS actually means for South Africa and for Africa.
Bronwyn, thank you so much for this opportunity. Very exciting time for South Africa to be taking over as chair of such an important and such a formidable global structure. It's no secret that in addition to the five countries, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, there are quite a few other countries that have already indicated a keen interest in joining this BRICS formation. This is a time, Bronwyn, and I'm glad that Pranjab is here, that we are clearly evidencing a global political and economic realignment of fantastic proportions. I think it's going to be totally defining. And for South Africa to have China hand over possibly in the next few weeks to us as South Africa to start defining the agenda of the BRICS nations politically, but most importantly, economically, is absolutely fantastic.
Pranjal, I'm going to get you to add in here, given your geoeconomic analysis and effectively your thoughts on what the chairship specifically means for any of the countries that hold that title at a given time.
Thank you, Bronwyn, and it's a pleasure to be here with everybody. I think that broadly, I mean, if I step back before talking about BRICS, I think the most important thing you have to realize is that emerging markets, developing economies have to set the agenda for growth and the next phase of globalization of the world. In the last 45 to 50 years, I think the agenda, the standards and the framework has been set by the Western countries, which have in many ways benefited them, in some ways benefited the rest of the world. But if I were to look at the ratio, I think the most of the benefits went to them because it was their set of rules that decided everything. Today, if you look at the center of gravity of the economy, the global economy, it is shifted very clearly to emerging economies. This is where the consumption is. This is where the growing populations are. This is where the innovation is. And this is where the most need for development and growth is. This is where we need to bring most people out of absolute poverty to improve the quality of life. And therefore, I think it's important that we take the stage, we take the world stage in terms of driving the agenda. And I think BRICS is a very important element of that agenda. And therefore, South Africa taking over in 2023 should bring in the perspective of a continent which has such a number of countries with such diversity, there is a lot of responsibility on South Africa on this front, because we've often seen that the developed world has tended to ignore what has happened on the continent. South Africa has grown despite odds, and therefore I think it's time for South Africa to be the pivot in BRICS as leading the charge for developmental, economics, and growth-oriented agenda.
Willem, coming from a Department of Trade and Industry perspective here,
Well, thank you, Bronwyn. And I think both Busi and Panjal has indicated the critical point that we are in terms of the global dynamics, the global economy from a geopolitical perspective. So I think it is also very opportune for South Africa to be chairing in 2023, particularly as we see that we're getting a lot of implementation and development with regards to the AFCFTA, the African Continental Free Trade Agreement, which, as you know, has, for example, started operating on the 1st of January this year, and there are more and more elements of it which are being implemented as the negotiations are finalized. And the huge opportunities that present in linking that with the more geopolitical elements of it becomes, I think, very important for us. And I think it's also important to remember the key deliverables that we found in previous years that when South Africa has chaired. If you, for example, look at our first chairing in 2013, that's at that conference where the new development bank feasibility was launched, which has become a reality, as we know. It was also the declaration for the BRICS Business Council to be established during that time. Also, we agreed on the contingent reserve arrangement where we look at liquidity issues. And I think through the subsequent chairing of the BRICS events in the summits, we, for example, really started implementing those elements. And those are a reality now. So I think, again, it's an inflection point in terms of what we can do in terms of the broader BRICS framework at the time when there's these geopolitical dynamics, but also now bringing in the AFCFTA and linking that with BRICS. So I think it's a very opportune time for us to really start looking at some of the practical issues and opportunities that we can drive the agenda.
And I suppose, Isaiah, that's what you're looking at as well, when you look to the future and say what opportunities are there to really spur South Africa's growth. This could be a significant opportunity, especially as Willem says, if we look to leveraging the African Continental Free Trade Area.
Absolutely, Bronwyn, and thank you for having me. And as all the other panelists have already mentioned, I think this is an opportune time for South Africa to be taking the chairmanship, especially after the COP27, which has been dubbed the COP of Africa. Yet again, we have a major grouping of emerging markets that are quite influential within the global policy arena being staged in South Africa within the African continent. I think this is also an opportunity to think about the just energy transition, not just for South Africa, but for the continent as a whole. Because what we are seeing from the advanced economy seems to be a repeat of the sort of development agenda that we have seen in the last 30 years or so, where development in Africa has been largely aid-driven and less investment. In this time around, with the just energy transition, we see a lot of denial for many African countries power their own economies, you know, which in a way that might actually jeopardize that transition. So I think it's an opportune time for South Africa to take this leadership to shape how the transition is going to happen over the many years that are coming in a way that benefits developing economies, in a way that makes sure that developing economies are not jeopardized in that transition. I think South Africa needs to take a lead, especially given that it's the largest polluter in the continent. It can take a lead in how it should happen in the rest of the continent.
Busi, I want to get a sense of the practicalities of what 2023 means for South Africa leading up to August. Can you give me a sense of the kind of engagements we're going to see on the ground as we lead up to the big event?
So first of all, Bronwyn, if I can start with the country theme, which was announced by Minister Pando some few weeks ago, I think it was about a couple of months ago. And this is BRICS and Africa, partnership for mutually accelerated growth, development, and inclusive multilateralism. So this is, it talks to exactly what every one of my colleagues has already pointed to as an absolute opportunity. We in business see this as an ideal opportunity to reignite the economic recovery, not just of South Africa post-COVID, but of the African continent post-COVID. So our work is going to start almost immediately, probably end of January, early February, because we have to accommodate agendas such as Davos and others. We are going to see an BRICS economic endeavor. We are going to see sector-focused engagements. Green economy is features high on that list, and therefore energy will fall under that green economy agenda. We have sectors that have an interest, such as manufacturing and agriculture, where we have seen some inroads into the BRICS countries, but not nearly enough. As you know, the African continent exports still quite a lot of raw material from the continent into other countries, and increasingly, the BRICS countries have become major takers of these economies. There are major developments that we've seen from the BRICS countries in terms of electrical vehicles and other new energy technologies. We believe this is an opportune time for us to say, please come into our respective countries. We've got the raw materials. Come and place yourselves here in order to beneficiate and then export together with us. Finally, tourism, a sector that is so important for job creation, but also because the continent is just so rich in terms of cultural and natural beauty, we believe will be absolutely critical. We're very excited, if I may say, as I conclude, Bronwyn, that this will be the first time since 2019 that the BRICS partners will be meeting in person. So we are going to leave no stone unturned in terms of preparing and making sure that the partner countries spend as much time here as possible, leading up to the summit, which is probably going to occur in early August, and thereafter cementing the deals that will have been signed during that time. So it is going to be an investment trade opportunity showcase of note.
Certainly sounds like the good news we are needing. Pranjal, talk to me about South Africa being able to ignite growth for Africa through this partnership, and what, in your mind, is the reality?
I like the phrase that Busi used, which the minister, honorable minister, mentioned as a theme, and especially the phrase multilateral, inclusive multilateralism. I think that's sorely missed in the world today. We've had some great multilateral institutions, but have they been inclusive? I don't think so. And that has been India's position also for several years, that the multilateral organizations have been completely captured by certain interests and they don't reflect the interest of the world as they should. Now, I think that let's place South Africa at the center of BRICS. I think to begin with, the immediate relationship within BRICS has to be leveraged by South Africa. In some ways, despite the various differences which will always be there between countries, South Africa should consider creating structures where with Brazil, Russia, India, we should, and China, of course, ensure that the investment and the collaboration in South Africa is for Africa. It's not for the benefit of the other countries. First, I think it's very important. You know, in India, we've started using the phrase called Atmanirbhar, which means self-reliance. I think the first step that South Africa should do is the same, which is create self-reliance for the continent. It has to be driven by South Africa. You have shown the path for several years now. It has now to radiate to the region. And which means that while China has been investing, you have to go beyond China's just investment, but creating
capacity and capability so that after a little bit of input from China, you are able to do it yourself. Similarly, if you bring in the, so there is the economic infrastructure and there's the social infrastructure. So economic infrastructure has come from China. Social infrastructure should be enhanced from India and Russia, for example, where you build skills, you build talent, you build education services, you build health services, and not just as a constant support, but as self-reliant, sustainable entities, businesses, models, which will outlast any support. And I like the fact what Isa said, and I think Willem has also said, that we cannot focus on aid-based growth anymore. In India, we've been able to throw away that burden we had on our shoulder of being dependent on aid. And you know, the funny thing is that many Western countries were upset that when we stopped taking aids, because when we stopped taking aid from the Western world, they got upset because we stopped also listening to them, right? So if you take aid, you also have to listen to them and follow their line, follow their path, and follow their instructions. So there is a set of people who would not want this aid-based growth to go away. They would not want private capital-led growth to come in. And therefore, it's very important that South Africa works with BRICS to build that foundation of capabilities and capacities, which will ensure that not just South Africa, but the entire region stands up on its feet and deals with the world from a position of strength.
If I could just add to that, I think we've seen...
Go ahead, Azar.
I think we've seen during COVID where the multilateral institutions actually failed to deliver for poorer countries, for emerging markets, as far as vaccines are concerned. It was South Africa alongside India and other emerging markets that stood up and said, we need vaccines for developing economies, for poorer countries, and the rich countries should give over those vaccines which they have hoarded more than what they needed. And eventually we saw that happening. In the similar vein, South Africa's chairmanship, we could really dub it the African BRICS chairmanship in 2023, because South Africa does not just represent its own interest, it represents the aspirations of the whole continent for emerging markets broadly in terms of what sort of investment we need as poorer countries, developing economies, to make sure that we can grow our economies. What sort of infrastructure do we need? Not just extractive infrastructure that is here just to extract minerals out of the continent, but infrastructure that can actually grow even the services sector, including the whole technology sector that is now the subject of competition within the advanced economies. So we have to stand as South Africa looking out for other emerging markets, but the African continent as a whole, in terms of what we need as far as the type of investment that we require, but also the skill transfer that we should get from the rest of the world.
Isaiah, I think you bring up some very key points there, specifically how BRICS was able to support one another over the COVID-19 pandemic, and specifically when it comes to the vaccines. Willem, let's pick up on the point you made earlier. You mentioned the African Continental Free Trade Area, and we have just touched on the surface. We're looking at a $3.4 trillion free trade area if we get AFCFTA right. And if you think about the timing of BRICS leading to, as Busi said, the summit potentially early August, this could be the exact window to bring to reality the potential of AFCFTA. Can you just take that thought process a little further?
Yes, thank you, Bronwyn. And I think important points that have been raised in terms of what we should focus within BRICS, and then also that link then with the broader continent through the AFCFTA. So a couple of things. I mean, obviously within BRICS, and I think that's why we're also working very closely with the South African BRICS Business Council. As governments, we are creating a framework And it's a systematic framework that we are creating, because the reality is, because of past historical structures of trade and also relations, for example, it is not something which is maybe natural for us to take place. I mean, we are countries which are like-minded in our approach, for example, and we all adopt a process of non-interference, equality, and mutual benefit, which are also elements which we, as within AFCFTA, are advancing. But as we're developing those broader concepts, and there's the three pillars that we're looking at, with political and security, there's economic and financial, and then also the social and people-to-people aspects. That's within BRICS that we are trying to build those three pillars, which again has a mirror what we are trying to do within the African Continental Free Trade Agreement and within AU as well. So those elements are important as in creating a broad framework. But the importance of us, for example, working very closely with the South African BRICS Business Council is to see how can we concretize the benefits for the BRICS members, and then obviously the discussion of South Africa's chair, the link with the AFCFTA. Obviously, increased trade, increased investment, technology transfer, skills transfer, and tourism are some of the key elements that we want to drive. Now, I think what is very important with this process is to say that the structure of trade, and that is with South Africa within BRICS, and then also the broader continent, obviously still is weighted to more towards the elements of us exporting raw materials and importing value-added products. And that is true not just for BRICS, but within the broader trade continent. If you look at the continent as well, with the rest of the world, in South Africa, with some of our partners, we have more value-added trade. So we will keep on working in that value-added trade component. But I think what is very interesting, and where there's a strong alignment, is the issue that a key point that we are driving within BRICS now, and particularly the agenda now, is what you call industrialization to diversify supply chains for resilience. And I think that has two aspects to it. One, in the geopolitical environment, what 2019 and subsequently the COVID pandemic showed us is to say that while there were some positive elements to these huge global supply chains, which, for example, located production of certain issues in certain areas, the disruption in the flow of production, one, caused obviously severe disturbances. So some of that, which we are still feeling, for example, the area of semiconductors, vehicles, and those elements. So I think there's a realization at the geopolitical level to say we need to diversify our supply chains. Now, again, as we look at the AFCFTA, the AFCA, one of the components is, for example, increased trade, but there's also a strong emphasis on developing industrial value chains in the continent. And those industrial value chains are based on existing, for example, developing a more value-added manufacturing value chains across the continent based on our skills and capacity. And that's where we bring in BRICS partners as well, for example, where they have established existing capacity. South Africa has some capacity, but I think if we partner in joint venture, we can really grow value-added exports to the rest of the world, also within BRICS, by developing those value chains, like, for example, in existing manufacturing space. But the second area is in the new areas. For example, you've mentioned the vaccines. Busi mentioned areas about electric vehicles, batteries, where, for example, we have technology, we have some manufacturing capacity, but our BRICS partners have technology and know-how. And through those partnerships, we can really develop industrial value chains. Through these partnerships, our BRICS partners can also unlock the opportunities of value that the AFCFTA presents, and you've given those numbers. I mean, it is all about 54 countries which we're able to trade. You gave the number of the market, also large young population, mostly of that. So there's a future consumer growth that we are looking at, and this is a way through mutual beneficial investments that we can develop value chains, which will then derive practical benefits in terms of trade investment in the continent.
I've been doing a lot of traveling across the continent, like most of you, and I was absolutely delighted when I was in Rwanda recently to learn that the first consignment of coffee had gone to Ghana for beneficiation. And I just thought, you know what, we are shifting that needle, and these examples are coming quickly to the fore. Busi, we do need to touch on the elephant in the room, and I think Willem opened the door, because you mentioned, Willem, the geopolitical environment, and we can't have this conversation and ignore Russia in terms of Russia, Ukraine, and the alignment that we've got in BRICS, what that ultimately means and how you're dealing with Lucy, from a South African perspective?
So from a business perspective, Bronwyn, the business unit South Africa, right at the beginning of the war between Ukraine and Russia, issued a statement indicating the acknowledgement of the humanitarian crisis that we were witnessing at the time and that we continue to witness. It has, the situation has impacted businesses, South African businesses that had production facilities both in Russia and in the Ukraine. So this is a situation that we're keen to see resolved as soon as possible. And we hope that our political principals will amplify their voices. They did call on the two nations to sit at a round table. We haven't seen any movement on that side. So I am very keen for our government to reissue that call and to rally the other BRICS nations in ensuring that we can see these countries sit at a table and resolve the situation. There is opportunity for us in both countries. We would like to remain friends with both countries. So, and we, of course, would like to see the people come back to normalcy. We've been, as South Africans, exposed to situations that were a humanitarian crisis at the time. So our empathies are with the people there.
Pranjal, from your vista there in New Delhi, weigh in on this very topic.
I would like to agree with Busi. I think India also has taken a path where we are saying that we don't want the war. We don't think this is a good idea. But at the same time, we are not saying that that we are friends with both the countries, and we've had historical relationships with both. We don't want the conflict to continue. We want it to end. I don't want to get into the reasons for the conflict, because then we'll widen the scope of the discussion to who caused it and what was the trigger, etc. But the fact is that it has made a huge impact on the global supply chains. It has had an impact on energy. It has triggered an energy crisis in Europe. But it also brings to mind some lessons that we have to learn. I would like to say that this is a crisis of Europe, which has a global impact, but it's not a global crisis alone. There are enough crises in our backyards for us to focus on. So yes, we will feel the ripple effects, but Asia and Africa have to focus on themselves, even though there have been attempts from Europe to say that, well, forget about your troubles and just focus on our troubles. And our foreign minister has actually gone on record saying that it gives the impression that Europe feels that Europe's problems are the world's problems, but the world's problems are not Europe's problems. So I think we have to get out of that mindset. And strong leadership in countries like India and South Africa have ensured that the emerging economies have the confidence to stand up and say, well, yes, that's a problem, but we have to deal with our issues as well. I want to comment on the African Free Trade Agreement. One of the ways to focus for South Africa to work with BRICS, perhaps in my view, could be, let's say, a single point agenda. And what could that single point agenda be? And it links to Ukraine and Russia as well. The continent led by South Africa with the support of BRICS should just invest $1 trillion in continental logistics connectivity, whether it's railways, whether it's roads, whether it's ports. You have a fantastic coastline. You have terrific land, arable and agriculture produce, and it's just lying waste. It's easier to export than to ship it internally. Again, I can tell you that there are many countries which have gone through this cycle. India used to have the same problem. We used to make a joke. It was a dark joke that it was easier to import coal from Australia to India than to take it from the port to inside where the power plants is, in terms of cost as well. If South Africa were to work with BRICS to say that, look, let's invest in infrastructure for logistics. your free trade agreements is automatically, it's a winner. Because what is the biggest hurdle to free trade? It's not just customs duties, but it's the cost of transfer of goods. So I would like to suggest that this is the way to take it forward and make sure that the BRICS community commits itself under South Africa's leadership and guidance to invest in logistics in Africa. That will pave the way for an explosion of economic growth.
You've actually given me, I don't know how to describe it, but I think a shiver down my spine of excitement, because that is the best starting point that I have heard. I mean, we talk about the free movement of goods, services, and people. And I just logistically look at the fact that last week I flew off the continent to Doha and then back onto the continent to get to Morocco. When you say let's invest in this infrastructure to create the reality of the free movement of goods, services, and people, I mean, maybe, Isaiah, that is the singular focus. If that is what we achieve out of our chairship of BRICS, that could ignite this growth that we so desperately need for South Africa and for the continent. What do you feel about that?
I absolutely agree, but I think the economic relevance of BRICS has not yet been reflected in the political power to change global institutions. And that's one aspect where we might need to see efforts being put. For instance, the EU is represented in the G20. The African Union is not. Yet it has 1.4 billion people, you know. Well, I think it is a mistake for the global community to actually not recognize that fact and to leave 1.4 billion people not represented in a global forum that determines how their future is going to look like. Unfortunately, South Africa, alongside you know, all the other members of the BRICS, are part of the G20. And in the bloc, they can lobby to make sure that Africa as a continent through the African Union is included in the G20 to make sure that Africa contributes as a bloc to how global multilateral institutions shape policy in the future of the world. Particularly as we move into all this, you know, greening of the global economy, which will come with carbon taxes, and of which we know most African countries, they still depend on sectors that are heavy polluters, which means they will be on the receiving end of carbon taxes in terms of exports. So it's quite key for BRICS to lobby to make sure that that trade policy is implemented in a way that does not disadvantage poorer countries, and in particular, those that are on the south of the globe.
Willem, if you can just add to what Isaiah is saying there in terms of our understanding from a Department of Trade and Industry and commercialization perspective, how that engagement is going to happen pre-BRICS with African countries that need to be represented at the forum here in August.
I think, Bronwyn, you raised an important point. If you look at each one of the sessions where South Africa chaired, the Africa agenda was very critical for us. So, for example, if you look at the theme for the first 2013 summit that we hosted, it was called BRICS in Africa, Partnership for Development, Integration and Industrialization. The second summit, which was the 10th BRICS summit that we chaired in 2018, there was again BRICS in Africa, Collaboration for Inclusive Growth and Shared Prosperity in the Fourth Industrial Revolution. And was very important, it's not just the agenda that we had at that time, but for example, South Africa had a very strong outreach program. So participation include with the BRICS leaders, the chair of the AU Commission chair, the chair of NIPED, heads of state and government implementation committee, the heads of state of government chairing of the regional economic groupings, with all SADC members present. For example, the president of the African Development Bank and the chief executive officer of the NIPAD Planning and Coordinating Agency. So that was what we did in 2018, and obviously we will build within that one. And I think, as again, as we raised the element of the AFCFTA is a very critical component. And I think just also to touch on the issue around infrastructure. I think our view is to really implement the AFCFTA, you need three legs which need to be implemented. One is increased trade, obviously, and that deals with tariffs and non-tariff barriers, for example, which the AFCFTA addresses. The second element is then, for example, industrial value chains. And then the third element is the issue around infrastructure. And I think these are all critical components, and I think we've also been talking to them about them in isolation. But the element as well is to say that for the AFCFTA to be implemented and for the BRICS benefits to be really felt amongst BRICS members and within the African continent, it needs to be a partnership between business and government. The issue around infrastructure is, yes, there's a strong component which government must play a role, but there's also what role does private sector play in the infrastructure itself. But also, if you bring these three components together, if you build infrastructure around an industrial value chain, link that to trade, then the sustainability of it becomes obviously much more stronger, as opposed to just randomly building infrastructure for the sake of infrastructure, which is required. Obviously, we know, we're aware of the challenges in the continent, but it's about linking these three around tangible economic opportunities. And I think the benefits of the continent for our BRICS partners, and also the benefits within BRICS itself for South Africa, is really about the practical implementation of it. And I think that's, again, to reemphasize our close partnership with the South African BRICS Business Council, is really to say, at the end of the day, how do we work with business to really implement and take use of those opportunities? As government, we create the framework, we can facilitate, but at the end of the day, BRICS must make sense for the BRICS partners, it must make sense for the African continent, but ultimately it must make sense for business, because that's where the implementation takes place to a large degree.
And Bronwyn, remind us that infrastructure is actually an enabler to the two components that Willem referred to, which are trade and industrialization. So it is critical that we focus on infrastructure. And I'm so excited that Punjab has given us a kickstart and said logistics is a great place to start. South Africa would benefit immensely. We know how our own internal infrastructure requires so much investment just for us to get goods from one node to another within the country, but also across the short borders into Botswana, into Namibia, and so forth. So if we were able to focus on that, the opportunities would be absolutely amazing. That'd be lead opportunities for big and small and medium enterprises. And of course, there would be downstream opportunities for everybody as we move and shift goods along. So I'm very excited about that.
Isaiah, we know that the situation is now worse on the infrastructure funding gap post-COVID-19. And we're looking at, depending on what source you quote, infrastructure funding gap of between $120 billion to $180 billion on an annual basis. So there is a lot of ground that we need to make up here before we can actually catalyze to where we were pre-COVID-19. And I suppose that the discussion here about private and public sector is critical to see that cooperation. This is not something that we don't discuss all the time, but perhaps the urgency now in this post-COVID-19 reality for us to play catch up is something that we need to address head on, Isaiah.
Absolutely. It is something that needs urgent attention. And I think within the South African context, we have seen the FSCA, which is the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, which has amended Regulation 28 alongside the National Treasury to make sure that infrastructure as an asset class is recognized separately, which means the patient capital of pension funds and provident funds and retirement funds can actually invest in infrastructure, which from an investment perspective makes a lot of sense because it's inflation linked, which means it can provide the protection that retirees require from inflation, but it's also pensioned because this is a retirement funding, which is exactly what we need to see across the board within the BRICS countries. That patient capital being redirected to investments in infrastructure, which can benefit both the investors, which are the retirees, but also the countries within which the infrastructure investments will be made. And I think we have already demonstrated as a country to say infrastructure is critical for growth, but here is how we are modifying the investment landscape to make it easier for private sector to participate in the infrastructure investment.
Pranjal, right in the beginning of the conversation, you spoke about the fact that India had become less and less reliant on aid. And I think the point was made by the panel that we don't want aid-related growth. Can you give us a sense of, because this is, you know, we talk about the enabling environment that government needs to create, and then private sector will come to the party once you have certainty of rules, once you have a clear roadmap. Can you perhaps talk about some of the lessons from India that we will be able to immediately bring to the map when we engage in this BRICS group in here on the continent?
Absolutely. So there are several examples of that. If I were to look at highways, we have brought the private sector to come into partnership with the government, because obviously capital is in short supply for the government as well. But we have leveraged public-private partnerships in many different ways over the last 20 years. You know, some grand visioning also happened in about 20 years ago under the Vajpayee government. A golden quadrilateral project was launched, which meant that the four corners of the country would be connected in a quadrilateral highway. So it connected all the states, which were, of course, the highways are running through it. So it was not about connecting one city to the other or one capital to the other. India, as you know, is a federal structure. We have 29 states, and each state has its own political structure. It's very federal and independent, and sometimes chaotic and quite confusing. However, we were able to have the National Highway Quadrilateral Project, which picked up pace and momentum. It went through its own crisis. It came down and went up, but it created the vision for the country to work towards. We went through several models of public-private participation, and now we've come to a level where we know how it works. It's not easy, for sure, but there was a very clear goal, and we have worked on that goal, and now we have a fantastic goal. For example, we've said that we'll build 50 kilometers of highways every day, and that is on track. It went down to 20, some years it went down to 15, but it's come back again. And now all the state governments, from the ruling parties to the opposition parties, have now agreed that yes, it makes sense. Second was to have internal highways within the states. Now let me come to airports. Now airports, we have privatized many airports. We took greenfield land parcels and made companies bid for it and gave them a complete turnkey project. We got global companies and airports like Zurich Airport, etc., to partner with Indian companies and build airports. Now, if you go to Bangalore, Hyderabad, Mumbai and Delhi, we have completely new airports that they're expanding even more with 20 million, 30 million annual capacity of passengers. The models were also very interesting, and some of them have evolved. So I'm not saying that the model will be perfect from the day one, but you cannot wait for the perfect model either. So land parcels were given, airport itself does not make money. So there were separate lands which were given. So in Delhi, for example, the company which developed the Delhi Terminal 3 was also given a land parcel near the airport to monetize. And there we have built an aero city where about 20 hotels have come up. So the company which has built the airport is also earning money from the hotel's revenue, which has come up in the aero city. The point is that all of this was, you know, mostly private capital money. Government, of course, provided some funds. There were joint ventures, there are various seed funds. Some multilateral agencies also chipped in. IFC had a role to play in many projects like this. The point is, you have to have a goal. You have to say Dakar to Djibouti has to be connected. You have to say Cairo to Cape Town has to be connected, and then figure out what to do. You'll have to experiment, but because this is between countries, of course, there will be another layer of complications, but there is a wonderful body called the African Union. And, you know, African Union is becoming stronger by the year. And I feel that if we can bring different and innovative models of public-private participation, investors from across the world will come in. Because today, the growth is in our continent of Asia and the continent of Africa. The European continent, the Americas are completely saturated. This is where the growth is, and therefore, we have to bring in new ideas, new models to make sure that this investment in ports, airports, railways, roads, make the ignition that Africa really needs.
So Willem, earlier in the conversation, you set out the trade tariffs, the industrialization, and the infrastructure as the three points that effectively need to work together. Are you happy with this thinking that perhaps we elevate infrastructure to the first point, and then it ties in terms of the tariffs, and it ties in terms already the industrialization, and then into the tariffs? What is your thought around perhaps the subordination of the other two and the elevating of the logistics and infrastructure for this BRICS summit, which is upon us, and collating the mindset and the money around that goal?
Well, I think that's an important point. I mean, again, you raised the issue of the funding gap around industrialization. I think some analysis have also shown that, as you said, $175 billion a year gap between that. And one should also remember that post-COVID-19, many governments across the world have a very high debt burden because of the responses that was required. So again, the point of the critical role that government must play, yes, but this partnership with private sector, private capital to build infrastructure is very important. And I think the issue is to say that that's a discussion that I think we will also have with the South African BRICS Business Council, and also as part of their outreach to the continent to say, do we front load infrastructure or do we have a complementary approach between the three? And I think why it's also important to always look at the three components is because if you're going to bring in private sector and you're going to bring in public-private partnerships, as Pranjal indicated what happened in India, that needs to be linked to some kind of a industrial value chain somehow, because there needs to be a flow of goods and needs to be linked to trade to somehow also make the sustainability of those elements more practical to a large degree. Because again, if we take that many governments globally, and it's not just in Africa, deals with these high debt burdens, the issue is to say that how do you find that balance between all of the players to do that? And again, infrastructure obviously is a point of discussion. And again, the element is going to be said, where do we find particular projects on the continent? I think what is very important to also remember is that within BRICS, you know, we all have our industrial development agencies. We've got some of our infrastructure development agencies. We've got the New Development Bank, right? Which is also there, which is up and running, which is actually looking at larger projects at the moment. Then we also have, for example, in South Africa's case, we've got the Export Credit Insurance Corporation, which have this unique capacity that it's taking political and commercial risk for projects in the, well, globally, but they have a strong focus on the continent where they're able to manage those. And again, those are built around particular projects, whether it's infrastructure projects or trade projects or investment projects. So the thing is to say that if one can leverage the various BRICS countries, their agencies, it will also make it much more manageable, some of these projects, because you manage the risk around it and you also spread the risk amongst the different parties. So I think, yes, infrastructure is definitely a point, but I think we will have the discussion with the South African BRICS Business Council and also with our outreach program on the continent to say, do we focus on that or do we focus on all three? And again, how do we link those challenges to the AFCFTA?
May I just add one point to what Willem said? look, there is a huge opportunity here. And with due respect to China, China has been the factory of the world for several years now, but there is a crisis in China. We have to recognize that as well. Apart from the COVID crisis, the fact is that the world does not want to be over-reliant on just one region for manufacturing. And you see that because if that region goes into some kind of a problem, then the entire world gets impacted. So therefore, the biggest investors and manufacturers of the world are now looking to de-risk themselves from a single location for manufacturing. Some of that benefit is coming to India, some of that is going to Southeast Asia, some of that should come to Africa. Now, if Africa were to step up and say, look, we can do it, and Rwanda has shown some very good examples with Volkswagen's investment in Rwanda to assemble the vehicles. South Africa is a great manufacturing country. Why not spend it and expand it to other regions as well? So therefore, I think if we were to talk about manufacturing investment in Africa and logistics investment in Africa 2 years ago, 3 years ago, it would have sounded a bit less credible. But today, I think it's far more viable.
If I could add to that.
I'm mindful of the time. Yes, Isaiah, absolutely go ahead. And then I'm going to small businesses. Boosie, I'm teeing you up for that because we cannot leave small businesses out of this equation. Isaiah.
Yeah, if I could add one area where Africa can actually position itself as a hub for manufacturing, it is to do with the decarbonization of the global economy. It cannot happen without the minerals that are on the African continent. But so many often we see the raw materials being shipped out of the continent to develop all this technology that the global economy requires. That's where we can position ourselves to say, private investors come to the continent, we do have the minerals, manufacture here on the continent and create jobs, reduce poverty, because it's actually cheaper for you to do it here if you actually are manufacturing at the site of extraction of the minerals. So there are a lot of economic benefits to doing that. We just need to stand on one voice and actually position ourselves as the next manufacturing hub as far as the decarbonization of the global economy is concerned.
And coming out of COP27, you're absolutely right. That is a theme that we should run with, the decarbonizing of the global economy. Boosie, mindful of the fact that we've got 8 minutes or 7 minutes left of this discussion, and small businesses are critical to economic growth going forward, entrepreneurship. And I suppose I want to get a sense, I've asked you this question before, as to how small businesses are going to benefit from the BRICS grouping, and specifically what plans you have to make sure that this is inclusive of those entrepreneurs that would really like a leg up as well if there's one to be had from this relationship.
Bronwyn, in addition to what you've said, actually small businesses are very important in developing economies, and they have a much higher job creation intensity than the large businesses. So this is an area that we are paying particular attention to, especially after in a review exercise that we did as the British Business Council, seeing that we're going to be celebrating our 10th anniversary when we take over the chairship. Of how effective we've been as a BRICS Business Council, we were told that we could have done better in including small, medium enterprises. That's one of the opportunities that we see going forward. I personally am very excited that our counterparts at the BRICS Women's Business Alliance, which was launched in 2020 under Russia's chairship, which South Africa wants to elevate this year as we meet in person, that particular structure has adopted the agenda of small and medium enterprises. And I'm excited because women bring a unique energy in terms of delivery. So I expect that we'll be seeing fantastic delivery for small and medium enterprises as we go forward, but also in the African continent, a larger proportion of small and medium enterprises are actually owned by women entrepreneurs. So this makes absolute sense that our counterparts at WBA are going to be running with the agenda, hand in glove with ourselves, of course, as the BRICS Business Council. Now, where do the opportunities lie? I think across the spectrum. If one looks at India as an example, be it in technology, be it in textiles, be it in manufacturing, you find small and medium enterprises there producing quite effectively. Tourism is totally well positioned for small and medium enterprises. But I believe also that as we look at the large projects, be they logistics, be they energy, we should carve out opportunities just as South Africa did in the Renewable Energy Independent Power Producer Procurement Program. There were opportunities that were carved out especially for small and medium enterprises, not just in terms of supplying or taking, but also in terms of implementing some of the smaller projects themselves. So we have examples galore that we can use as templates going forward. If I may just, as I conclude, remind us that in the Mumbai airport, Punjab, you may recall, three South African companies, Airports Company South Africa, Bidvest, and Old Mutual, partnered in with the local promoter in actually delivering that absolutely beautiful airport, which is a total gallery that I always want to spend enough time in. We partnered in the delivery of the new terminal at in Brazil, in Sao Paulo. So we have examples, and I think we're ready to actually action as we take over the chairship.
I'm going to challenge you all. There's 3 minutes left on this webinar. I'm now taking you forward 9 months. We're at the end of August 2023. We have been through the BRICS Summit, and we are now in a post-BRICS Summit conversation celebrating the successes of that summit. In terms of the analysis that you are doing, the discussions that we are having, what is the critical success factor to come out? So I want you here to distill what you are looking for in your individual position, the headline that stands out post the BRICS Summit in 2023 that really demonstrates that we have achieved what we should achieve, what we are looking for in terms of leveraging both South Africa's position and the African continent. So I am hoping you're all looking at me and thinking, how am I going to do this? You're looking for that headline. So I'll start. For me, the headline is that BRICS 2023 brings together the Brazil, Russia, India, China, South African grouping to unlock, I'm sorry I'm stealing it from you, Pranjal, to unlock $1 trillion in infrastructure spending across the African continent. That's my headline. Sorry, Pranjal. Isaiah, I'm coming to you here.
For me, it would be Africa, the next center of global manufacturing for decarbonizing the global economy.
Willem.
For us, I think twofold. One, for example, our recent analysis, if you look at dollar trade and look what's called mirror data, i.e. imports from other countries which they registered for South Africa, BRICS still represents about 30% of South Africa's trade in 2021. So building on that, I think, and working with the South African BRICS Business Council and South African businesses, small, medium, and larger businesses, is to secure investment, exports, technology transfer, and then processes around skills transfer. And then with the continent to see how can we have some practical, tangible projects, whether it's around industrial value chains or whether it's around infrastructure. to say that at the end of the day, I'm not going to put a target to it, but if we have tangible projects and orders, then that will be a success. And I think that is what we as the DTIC is also targeting, in, for example, in our own activities, to say, did we get orders? Did we get investment secured? And then in Africa, could we have some kind of projects that we started as catalysts?
Excellent. So did we get orders? Did we get investment? And did we get projects that are started, that have been conceived, that in the boardroom, that will actually come to fruition? And hopefully we'll be able to measure the numbers of those very shortly after the BRICS summit. Punjab.
So, Bronwyn, you took my headline away, but I will offer another headline. I would say that South Africa triggers BRICS to transform Africa into a potential driver of global growth.
Very powerful. We like that. And Busi Mabuza, let's see what you have in store for us.
$1 billion invested in an ESG fund that will focus on the African continent.
Wonderful. Now, do you know what I've done? I've actually set our vision board for BRICS, which means that we can work towards creating those headlines as a reality. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you all today. Thank you so much. And as we gather momentum towards August Token, we're going to have many more of these conversations that will really make those headlines a reality by the time we come to August 2023. Just official thank you, Busi Mabuza, chairperson of the South African chapter of the BRICS Business Council, Willem van der Spade, chief director of trade, industry and competition at the DTIC, Isaiah Maplanga, chief economist at Alex Forbes, and Pranjal Sharma, geo-economic analyst and author in New Delhi, India. Thank you so much for joining us on this live webinar and capitalizing the conversation in December 2022 to make sure that we start achieving those milestones as we move to January 2023. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Bronwyn.